on KTOO's Monday evening program, Focus on Community. Peace Talk is sponsored by the local chapter of Veterans for Peace. It's our contribution to our community's continuing conversation about the imperative of peace in our times and about the changes in our society needed to give peace a chance.
Over there wasn't so far anymore. What we did unto others washed up on our shore. The answer is hard to ignore. The end of war. The end of war.
Well, good evening once again. This is Phil Smith, your host for this month's Peace Talk program. Thanks, by the way, for John and Dolly Kramers, who, as usual, are handling the technical details of actually getting us on the air. This evening we have a bifurcated program. We have about a half an hour interview that I did a couple of weeks ago with a gentleman named Bara Kasambara. Bara is from Mali and was introduced to us by Mark Stofa, who has done volunteer work in Mali, and in specifically with Bara Kasambara. Bara is the country coordinator, country director, for the work of the Rinrock Foundation, which is the country, of course, being Mali. We had a nice chat about the type of work they do, and we also discussed about the sort of the unintended consequences of the blowback, if you will, from Libya when NATO went in and defeated Gaddafi and his forces, and that left a bunch of people with not a hell of a lot to do but to raise hell. And so Mali is now in the hands of a coup, and various groups from neighboring countries in West Africa are after power and creating a little bit of chaos. Anyway, let's sit back now and listen for about the next half hour to the interview we did with Bara Kasambara from Mali.
Well, good morning. It's actually Thursday morning, May 3rd. This will be aired on Monday evening, May 21st. So just so that you know, this is a recording of an interview that I'm happy to conduct with Mark Stofa, one of our stalwart Juno people and a member of Veterans for Peace, and his friend and I guess former co-worker, Bara Kasambara, who is the country director of the Farmer to Farmer program under the NGO Winrock International. And Mark, why don't you go ahead and introduce Bara and let him know, or let us know, why Bara's here and what's going on.
Great. I associated with Winrock International about a decade ago or more. I guess I've been to Haiti, and then I went to Mali twice to do some, as I call it, volunteer consulting. I went over and worked with some of the fishermen and fish processors on the Niger River. And Bara is the country director for Winrock International that runs this farmer-to-farmer program in several countries that he can talk about. Bara's, I won't say that there's any typical African, but Bara's from Mali. How many languages do you know, Bara?
Well, I speak, let us say, four languages.
Okay, at least four. And probably more than that he's not fluent in, that he wouldn't claim that, but he's passable in.
So that would be French and English and Dogon?
And Bambara and Fulani.
Yeah, so five.
Okay. And a little bit Sonrai.
Right, okay. And you don't speak Wolof?
Yeah.
You do speak Wolof?
No Wolof.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I think, Bar, you're a trained agriculturalist, is that right?
Yes, I'm agronomist.
Yeah, agronomist. Okay. Yeah. And so I thought Bara was coming over for a country director meeting from several other African and Asian countries directors that met in myself and other people that have that Barra hosted over there. He's all of us who didn't independently know at the time, we were all trying to get him to come to see us, and so this is his second stop on a three-stop tour anyway of the U.S. of people that have worked with him over there. He's just, once you've worked with him, once you'd go back and do it again and again just to go over there and work with him. It's, he's just a very engaging person, and the hospitality is just incredible when we go over there. So Barra's in town today. We're hoping to do some fishing and sightseeing and whale watching and those kind of things. And we're just going to talk to Barra a little bit about what he does with Windrock and international development there in the country, and then kind of just get Barra's perspective. Of course, he was there during the recent coup in Mali, and Barra can kind of just give an on the ground. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Talk about what it's, you know, what the situation is there.
Right. Well, go ahead. Welcome, by the way, Barra.
Okay, thank you.
I want to welcome you to the States and to Alaska and to Juneau, and I wish you could stay longer.
Okay, no problem. Thank you for accepting me in Juneau. I would like, first of all, really to frankly thank Mark Stoffer to take advantage of my visit in U.S., let us say, in Arlington, to bring me to visit him in Alaska. I highly appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I would like also to thank him for his commitment, because he went twice in Mali to support our poor community involved in fish subsector. So this is organized under Windrock International. So shortly, Windrock International is a non-profit organization working in America and worldwide to support disabled people, to give them opportunity of economic development while preserving environment. And their logo of development is really putting ideas to work. That means at Windrock, they always try to innovate, putting ideas to work, take the best advantage of things really to help people. So Windrock is working in Mali since more than 10 years in many subsectors. So they already implement many programs. The first one was really PEG. This is a partnership for economic growth, where they try to empower local NGO really to support poor community, mm-hmm, by increasing agricultural productivity and production by distributing, let us say, improved seeds, good practices, many other things. Another project was, let us say, ASFI. ASFI is African Smallholder Family Initiative. During this project, they tried also to support poor community through, let us say, a program called Food for Peace. This is really to make a good deal between American farmers and also developing country farmers. That means, for example, American farmers' products are sold in one country, and many makes from this, let us say, deal is also provided to poor community to improve, let us say, their economic opportunities. And also, Windrock is well known because it is the first NGO in Mali which make the promotion of drip irrigation. As you know, in a developing country, water is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
So through using drip irrigation, you can save a lot of water. Meanwhile, you can increase significantly production and productivity. Windrock implements many projects. So shortly, let us go to the ones we are implementing called Farmer to Farmer.
Okay.
Farmer to Farmer project is, let us say, a technical assistance.
Mm-hmm.
What means, through this project, WinRock will select good volunteers and send them to developing country to support farmers. So let us say volunteers are, in our understanding, our guests of honor, committed to support and to help poor people to increase their opportunity for economic growth. So volunteers are really skilled people, like Mark Stoffer in fishery subsector. His field. So fishermen in Mopti have many problems on how to process fish, how to preserve fish, how to make a good quality of fish. So this is the daily job of Mark. When he came, he just shared his experience with a fisherman in Mopti. And they try to find the best solution. So some people say, oh, how a volunteer coming from U.S. can come and help poor people in developing area, because the technology are significantly different. But technology are must be suitable for this producer over there.
Mm-hmm.
It is not, let us say, just to bring high tech from U.S. and to apply them in Mali. No. It is just to try to see what are the advantages we can take from this technology and make them suitable for this, lettuce producer in Mali, just to improve a little bit, step by step, what they are doing.
Hmm.
And I just want to give one short example.
Okay.
You know, in Mali, fishermen were supported by an office, government office, called the Regional Director of Fishery. So one of the problems fishermen are facing in Mali was, let us say, damage from insects. So through the Regional Director of Fishery, they make the promotion of three kinds of chemicals, let us say actylate, guardenon, and I forget the other.
Okay.
So they are using this chemical to preserve fish. And when we have a kind of, let us say, change in this office, some which have this skills move for another office. So fishermen didn't have no longer this kind of chemicals. And also the private sector was not able to continue bringing, let us say, these chemicals to make them available for fishermen. And then, as insects continue their damage, so fishermen are using prohibited, let us say, chemicals used for cotton treatment and other crops. And you agree with me, it will be very, very serious for the human health. And when we draft a scope of work and say, oh, we have this problem in Mali, and we are looking for a volunteer coming to help us to overcome this constraint. Hopefully, we got Mark Stoffer. Also, we say, oh, this is a very simple challenge. You know, first of all, you have to know chemicals in eating food are prohibited. It is formally forbidden. And you can use citric acid to preserve mm-hmm. your fish. We say, wow, this is incredible. We have citric acid available in our market. People are using in their tea. So let us say they are eating the solution of their own problem. So Mark, make the experiment this. And I say today, really, it had been a very good solution for fishermen. So this is a kind of solution of technology, really, our volunteer introduced, very simple, low cost and efficient for our producer.
Yeah, and I actually brought that over there just because it's people use this citric acid here when they're out in the field moose hunting. That's what you can put on your moose to keep the blowflies mm-hmm. off of it, and that's all. That's essentially what they needed, was just something that the insects wouldn't bother their fish and transport it with.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and yeah. It's a natural food. It's right. not, you know, it's citric acid is in everything. It's not a, it's a, basically it's the stuff of oranges. So,
so I don't want to carry this. This is fascinating, but so WinRock is this multinational NGO, and is it funded by the FAO? Or?
It's funded, well, you can tell, but it's
Winthrop is Winthrop Rockefeller. It is the family of John Davidson Rockefeller.
Ah.
And I think
so it's a private foundation.
Yeah, private foundation.
I see.
But
okay.
I think you can correct me, but USAID, they get money from USAID, WinRock does, and then they are the ones that are sort of the ones that get set up the infrastructure to implement the programs over.
But they're not a function of the United Nations.
No.
They're private.
Okay. No.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, so things are going well in Mali, and life goes on, and suddenly we read in the newspaper about 6 weeks ago that there has been a coup and that there has been enormous unrest in the north.
Yes.
The northern part of Mali is about the size of Texas, but it's right in the middle of that where Timbuktu is located. Mm. So all of a sudden, this stability or apparent stability is shattered, and I've heard Al-Qaeda is coming in, that there is a sort of a forced imposition of Sharia law. The main government has been overthrown. The country is run by a military coup. How is this changing things for the normal person in Mali who goes to work and minds his own business and wants to just live in peace?
Well, I think what is happening in Mali right now is, let us say, the result of a very long history.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, I would like to make clear some things shortly. You know, in Mali, we have, let us say, two parts. The north, with white people, Tuareg or Tamashek, it is the same.
Mm-hmm.
People are living. So they raise animals, they are living there. So from Mopti is the border from the north to the south.
And I guess I just give just a quick thing on Mali. The southern part of Mali, it's bordered by about, I think, seven countries.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The southern part of Mali is more towards the equator. It's more lush rainforest as you get down towards Guinea and that mm-hmm. part. Where in the northern part of Timbuktu is the southern edge of the Sahara Desert, or it is the Sahara Desert. And Mopti, which you talked about with the fishing part, is the fishing center of the Niger River, which is really the heart of Mali mm-hmm. is the Niger River, which starts down in Guinea and Sierra Leone, comes up to about Timbuktu, and then it goes south. A lot of people hear about the Niger Delta. That's the mouth of it in Nigeria where all the oil issues are. But anyway, go ahead. I just wanted to...
Okay. So for this, we have two people living in Mali, many tribes. In the north, we have Tuareg or Tamashek people. And from Mopti to the south, we have, black people composed of Fulani, mm-hmm. Bambara, Dogon, Samogo, Bozo, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, in the north, Tuareg people, culturally, for them, a novel must not work. He have to learn, how to fight. And therefore, they have slaves called Bella people, black people, doing everything for them. Okay, so the novel just learn how to fight, how to use weapon, everything. So this is their culture. But in the South, the other people, they implement activities, economical activities for their livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
So they continue like this. And since 1991, when in Mali we started the process of democracy, so these Bella people become free. And since then, these Tuareg people have trouble because they didn't work by themselves, and the ones who are working for them leave. So this is one of the problems in the north. So they need maybe a substitute really to continue having their living means. Also, you know, Gaddafi, Libya president Gaddafi, Muammar Gaddafi, is supposed to be a Tuareg people. And he says sometime one part of his parent is coming from Mali. So this is the reason why when he was in trouble, last year, he called the young Tuareg people to join him, to support him. So these people, these young Tuareg people coming from Mali, Niger, and a part of, Mauritania, joined Gaddafi in this fight. Hopefully, Gaddafi lost the fight.
Yeah.
So these young people are now well equipped with high-tech weapon, many money, because Gaddafi gave them a lot of dollars. So now they come back to, let us say, the motherland with weapon and money. So before the losing of Gaddafi, our former president, Amadou Toumani Touré, called ATT, so he starts and cry, oh, international, let us say, people, if these guys come back with this weapon, Mali will be in trouble. Because we have a weapon really our national army didn't have. And also they have the cell phone Troya, let us say, working with satellites, so they can make the connection between them everywhere in the desert. And you know also the Mali desert is very wide. So Mali government cannot control this wide desert. And also there is a kind of no man's land from Mauritania up Mali, a part of Nigeria, going south Algeria till Sudan and Ethiopia, where these terrorists are moving from one side to other side. So this is the reason why our president asked for an, let us say, sub-regional meeting to put our force army together and try to overcome really this terrorist. But I think he has been not heard. So these people are continuing trafficking drugs, weapons, everything, and also kidnapping white people. As I said previously, now they don't have slaves to work for them. They have to find other opportunity. So the good opportunity is trafficking drugs, weapons, and also kidnapping. Because if they kidnap white people, they will sell to another group. This group will be sent to another one. So this is the way we are gaining money.
So how long do you think this is going to go on? Is this going to settle down, or what has to happen?
So what has to happen is really if if the international community will not join their effort to support really these countries under threats, it will be very sad. You see, this is the reason why once this rebel comes from the war in Libya, and with some spies they have inside the army, in 3 days they took Kidal, Tombuktu, and Gao. How can you imagine this? 3 days, mm-hmm. three regions.
So, but again, what can the international community do at this point? I mean, we can't unwind the Libya war.
Yeah.
We can't unwind the events in southern Sudan, the yeah. new nation. Is there a sort of a unified request that might go out to the UN or the US or France or NATO or some yeah. other body?
So in my opinion, I think the best thing to do is now to support Mali army by, let us say, fighting means.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't need additional soldier.
Right.
Mali has soldier.
Mm-hmm.
So as we know, today war is, let us say, information issues and also equipment. So I think step by step, if Mali people, Mali soldiers are well equipped and well supported by information, they can push out all this rebel group. Because I think negotiating will not be, let us say, really relevant. Because currently, in north of Mali, we have 5 groups of rebels. The first one was MNLA. This is the National Movement for Azawad Liberation. So these 3 regions, Kidal, Tombuktu, and Gao, are supposed to be Azawad area. So what MNLA needs is to separate, to split really Mali into two. Mm-hmm. So you have Azawad and the other part of Mali. And this is not acceptable. So the MNLA has been joined by Amsardin. Amsardin is a kind of, let us say, Islamic group. Their goal is to implement, let us say, Islam in the whole Mali. And I think this also is not acceptable, because Mali is a like country. We have Christian, we have Muslim, we have animist, we have maybe other kind of religion, living really in harmony in Mali. I think in Mali we don't have, they bring, let us say, another problem Mali didn't know before. In Mali you can find in the same family, the father is Christian, the mother is Muslim, a part of kids are Islam, let us say Muslim and Christian. So Mali didn't have really a problem of religion. So the third group is, let us say, ACNI. ACNI is this terrorist group really involved in kidnapping white people and sell them.
When he says white people, he's talking about tourists that go to Timbuktu
yes.
on the road.
Sure. Yeah.
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 And also after that, this three groups has been joined by Boko Haram. Boko Haram is well known in Nigeria. This is the rebel group operating in Nigeria. So as there are also a religious group, they join Amsardin. Boko Haram said, we don't want something really made by white people. The question is, the weapon we are using, are they made by themselves? Question mark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And we have a last group now called Mujwa. This is a movement of implementing, let us say, Islam in the whole West Africa. So, as you can see, these 5 groups have different strategy and different goal. So Amsardin don't want the splitting into two of Mali. MLA is the only group who wanted this. So finally, if you want to bring back calm into Mali, is it possible to negotiate with this group of rebels? And with which group are we going to negotiate? This is the big question.
It's a big question and a big challenge.
So this is the reason why I say the best solution will be really to equip Mali soldiers and to support them by information and to get back the whole country step by step. This is my own opinion. Really.
Right. Well, it's informed. It would seem that the best way to do that, of course, would be to have outside countries who want to exert influence stay out and let these problems that are very local, let them be resolved locally. So there's no Chinese presence or U.S. presence or French presence or even perhaps Organization of African States. Just leave this to be a local thing. It'll be painful, but you'll have to work it out over time.
Absolutely.
Well, look, we've just gone a little bit further than I think I should have, but this has been absolutely fascinating. I really want to thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
And now this is, as I say, early May, and you've came here for your head of countries meetings, and now you're in Juneau. And where do you go from here?
So from here, I will go back to Washington, where I am invited also by a friend of mine to spend two couple of days.
Okay.
And then go back to Mali.
And you go back to Mali and go back to work in an uncertain political environment. Well, I admire you. I admire you greatly. And would like to remind you, you want to hear this interview? You can listen to it on www.ktoo.org.
Yeah.
I don't know what time of the day it's going to be in Mali, but it'll be our time, 7 in the evening. It'll probably be about 7 in the morning.
9 hours.
Nine hours, okay.
Time difference, yeah.
Well, you might have to get up early.
Okay.
But I hope you're listening, and it's been a real, real pleasure to have you on. And, Mark, thank you, too, for helping to make this possible.
Yeah, it's great to have a bar here in town, that's for sure.
And thanks to the inevitable, inexorable, ineffable Jeff Brown.
Yeah.
Who always makes this stuff possible for those of us lucky enough to live in Juneau. Yeah. So thanks to all, and let's get back to the rest of the program now. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that was the interview we did a couple of weeks ago, and we're delighted to be able to play it tonight. If you were listening carefully, you learned a lot about Mali, about what's going on over there, and about what might be done about it, including perhaps not starting or engaging in warfare when wordfare might work a little better and we can resolve issues in different ways. Well, this is a quick note to tell you you're listening to KTOO FM in Juneau, Alaska, and it's just a tad past 7:30. So we turn to our second half of the program. This is a delightful half, and I'm very, very pleased that Kayla Berger is here, and her mom is here too. But Kayla's the one that won the scholarship, so Mom, we're not going to talk to you very much. Kayla is the winner of this year's Veterans for Peace Scholarship. She's a senior at JDHS and will be graduating shortly. Every year we have a scholarship. And for the last couple of years, we have asked students to submit an essay based upon a song, an anti-war type song, or a song about war and about the conflict, that moved them in some or many ways. And before we talk to Kayla, I think we'll go ahead and play the song that she chose to write about. And it's a song that is very well known. It's by the Dixie Chicks, and it's called Travelin' Soldier.
2 days past 18, he was waiting for the bus in his army green. Sat down in a booth in a cafe there, gave his order to a girl with a bow in her hair. He's a little shy, so she gave him a smile, and he said, "Would you mind sitting down for a while and talking to me? I'm feeling a little low." She said, "I'm off in an hour, and I know where we can go." So they went down and they sat on the pier. He said, "I bet you got a boyfriend, but I don't care. I got no one to send a letter to. Would you mind if I sent one back here to you?
Another
That was pretty special. The Dixie Chicks singing Traveling Soldier. Perhaps we could just put it back on and play it until the end of the hour. But let's not. Let's talk to Kayla Berger. Kayla is, I think I mentioned, a senior at JDHS. She was one of seven who contributed to the scholarship. There were two from Wrangell, one from Sitka, and four from here in Juneau. And we sort of read these blindly, didn't know who wrote them and where they came from, but it was sort of pretty clear who the top essayist was. So, Kayla, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for participating and for being committed to these types of things.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think that the thought behind this scholarship is one that is the reason why I wanted to write for it. You know, it's such a powerful thing. Peace is it's something that we need to look towards more versus fighting what we can do to make our country more powerful. I think that enforcing peace and listening to music like this and writing about it and, you know, having that circulating around in the school, having a scholarship like that, it's just all something that can kind of bring us together to realize that there's more out there than just fighting.
Is there a lot of discussion at school about these types of things?
Well, I did my history classes this year, correspondence, so I wasn't in a classroom setting where we would be talking about peace and stuff like that, but what I hear in the hallways most of the time is more joking around about blowing stuff up, you know, this is America, we can do this, we're powerful. I think that there's something missing there. The movies and the media, they all enforce kind of that America is this big, powerful entity and that we're capable of doing whatever we want. And I think that, you know, we're not looking at the big picture about how this is affecting us in the long run and how later on, you know, we're not growing towards something better. We're not progressing to something more important in our
nation. Right, well, maybe we could take a few minutes and you could read the essay.
Yeah.
And explain how the music and the lyrics of Traveling Soldier impacted your thinking about these types of things. So
yeah.
Go ahead. This is Kayla Berger reading her winning essay in the Veterans for Peace Scholarship Contest. Kayla, go ahead.
All right. Thank you. The title of my essay is 2 Days Past 18. The start of the lyrics that will forever be imprinted on my brain. I remember the first time I ever listened to the song Traveling Soldier. I was about 9 years old, standing on a chair, trying to shout over the new album my dad had just brought home, attempting desperately to win my mom's attention. It took a moment for my buzzing 9-year-old self to realize, but my mom had begun to cry. I asked worriedly what was wrong, and she told me to listen to the song that was playing. I listened, and even though I was 9 years old, every word hit me in a way that I will never forget. Traveling Soldier has a way to move you. It attaches itself inside your mind and tugs on your heart. It has a way of making any person feel each word, no matter what their beliefs are on war. This is what music is for: moving you, releasing emotions, making you wonder, think, feel, and cry. From the first day that I listened to Traveling Soldier, I continue to have the same watery-eyed reaction each time it comes on the car stereo, on my iPod, or on television. It is a song that will devastate me time and time again. When I heard Traveling Soldier, I vividly saw every word that Natalie Maines sang. I saw a young romance put in danger by the terrifying idea that it would be severed. I saw the hope, the prayers, and the thoughts of this young girl awaiting the man she loved. I felt the flood of relief as she opened her first letter, finding out that he was all right, and then the flood of worry as the letter came to a close, telling her that he wouldn't be able to write for some time. It made me think about all those women who go through losing their husbands, who have children and babies on the way, and have to fight their way through the sadness and the pain of losing a loved one to stay strong for their families. The final verse of Traveling Soldier breaks and rebreaks my heart every time without fail. I think that it is the most important verse of the song because it makes you think about how many times you have heard names read over the TV, on news, or during sports games. It is easy to hear a name and not think twice, perhaps see a face and think, oh, that's sad. It's easy not to care and not fully understand what that life loss means and how that person died for you. This is exemplified very well in the last verse of the song, as Natalie sings about the name being read at a football game, nobody caring much, except that one person out there whose life suddenly changes forever. For me, this song reminds me each time I hear a name read, that there is somebody out there that has just lost their child or their loved one, and that their world has just been turned upside down and shaken, all in a matter of moments. Once the bagpipes have slowed and the song begins to fade out, you are left with a melancholy ache in the pit of your stomach. You feel as if you have just lost your lover, your child, or your friend. You feel a surge of respect for those who have endured the painful experience of those dreaded words you never want to hear. Your heart goes out to the families, those who have served for our country previously, and the men and women fighting for us as we speak. It makes you take a moment to send them silent little words of gratitude for defending our country and our everyday freedoms that we are so lucky to have. The future is in the hands of a newer generation. We decide what kind of a message we want to send to our nation. What kind of songs do we want our children to hear? What kind of things should they see to help them become more aware of the world around them? I believe strongly that music can make a difference in what we believe because it does something no article, paper, essay, speaker, or television can do. Music touches something in all of us that is very powerful and travels straight to the heart. We hear words as they are spoken, but with music, we feel those words as they are sung. Music is a very effective way to create awareness throughout the world. War is a terrible thing. For as long as people have been on Earth, there has always been conflicting opinions, unagreeable matters, all of which normally reside in fighting it out to the death. Whether it be over religion, land, terrorism, weapons, threats, or natural resources, in retrospect, it is all just one big argument that can't be settled. It is, in a way, the same exact concept of an argument that takes place on a school playground. Shouldn't we be setting an example for our next generation by handling things in a way that doesn't result in killing someone else's child? Shouldn't we just work things out with words and compromises? It is something that is almost impossible in a world filled with so much anger and hate. The idea of working something out through words is almost laughed upon in this day and age. You would think that throughout the decades, we would learn to rise above it all and do the better thing, that being the most powerful, the biggest, and the best isn't always really the best. The examples our country sets reflect back upon our children. From the earliest memory of war that I have, September 11th, so much of what I have heard in the news growing up since then are things like fighting and invading, killing and killing. Students of my generation say things like, let's just go bomb them out, and this is America, we can do whatever we want. Why do they say things like this? Because this is a message that has been imprinted on us since we were little. Perhaps if we lived up to the things that we told our own children in elementary school, we would learn to manage our problems by learning, sharing, compromising, and understanding others. I remember the elementary school playground. Recess time was the most cherished event of the day. Lunchtime would roll around after what seemed like a lifetime to our short attention span minds, and then we could finally all barrel down the halls out to the awaiting freedom and fresh air. Games of tag and kickball would go on, and occasionally there would be beef with one of the boys, who, let's face it, always started the fight. I remember the day when I was told I sucked at kickball by fellow classmate Nathaniel Brooks, which in turn led me to land a great big whopping toe punt right upon his 8-year-old shin. It was the first time I had ever been talked to by the oh-so-feared playground duties. My heart was in my throat as I was called out of class to face a sobbing Nathaniel and a stern, intimidating adult staring straight down at me. I was told to use my words, not fight. Then a couple days later, we decided to go to war after two huge towers came crumbling down. I remember wondering, why didn't they just use their words? I suppose it's because you can't view the world and all the conflicts that go on in it as a school playground, but perhaps we could all use the reminder from our children that kicking people in the shins is not the answer. We told them that to begin with, right? The messages we send are what determine how we handle the world in the future. I strongly believe that it is important to teach the children how to do the right thing. Through discussion, setting an example, the media, and music, we can help set the framework for a better future for our children to take control of. What we hear, see, and experience now determines how things will be in the future, and hopefully it will be a future in which every family across the world is able to receive a letter saying, your soldier is coming home.
Thank you very much. That was Kayla Berger reading the winning essay that she submitted to Veterans for Peace for her scholarship this year. So what are your plans this summer?
I am going to go work on my dad's commercial fishing boat in Bristol Bay, Alaska, and make some money for college.
You hang around Naknek, huh?
Yes, I do. It's a very small town and fishing community, and
I went to
should be fun.
Fifth grade in Naknek. That was a couple years ago.
I'm there for a couple months, but I can't imagine living there for any more time than just 2 months.
But you stay busy. There are a lot of openings, and I understand a lot of fish this year, right?
Hopefully.
A pretty good season?
Hopefully. Right. That's what I want to believe.
Super. And then this fall, you go to school?
Yes.
And you're going to UAS?
Yes. I'm going to stay here for a year and then figure it out from there.
So you don't have a major selected or?
I know I want to go into health sciences, and I'm interested in kind of a holistic viewpoint on medicine. So kind of have an idea about it, but still young.
Well, of course, you don't have to make any final decisions, but it sounds like you're in sort of a helping type of person.
Yes, I would say so.
Probably what you will do other than going to Dillingham or Naknek to kill fish. You'll probably spend a lot of time in your life in positions where you're sorting things out and making life better for other people.
Yeah, I think that it's important helping people, and that's why one of the reasons I've chosen the career that health sciences, I love being able to help people and knowing that they're walking away with something that they didn't have before, knowing that it's going to make them better.
You're going to do that here in Alaska? Or are you going to break your parents' heart and go to America or something?
I have no idea. No idea. Oh, okay. I'll probably stay in Alaska for a little bit at least. Alaska is where home is, so you always wind up back in Alaska at some point or another.
Yeah, well, my wife and I have two kids. One's in Amsterdam. The other's in Anchorage.
So, oh, wow.
I thought we were going to both of them evacuate the continent for a while. So your scholarship will be used to just generally support your first year of school out at UAS?
Yeah. It'll be really helpful. Thank you so much for awarding me that money. It'll be really helpful.
Thank you.
For whatever I decide to do.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I was telling somebody the other day that helping young people achieve their dreams is not a favor. It's a privilege.
Well, thank you so much. That's
and
very nice.
We're delighted that we were able to do that.
Thank you.
Now, how much time do we have left? A couple of minutes? I was wondering also if just about the scholarship process itself, because we only got, like six entries, and we're wondering if there were things that we could have done to get more students involved, or do you have a sense of that? How did you find out about it?
Well, I think it's just based upon the individual. There's a lot of scholarships that people can do that are up in the counseling office, and you just have to be motivated, and you have to go up there and look through them and get the ones that you can apply for and do them. But a lot of times you get caught up in the whole senioritis thing. And I know for me there were various scholarships that I picked out of the box and were in my pile of things that I was going to do, and then the day before came around and I was scurrying around trying to get letters of recommendations from teachers and stuff, and I just never got them in. But I think that being prepared and starting early, and even there's scholarships that are available to juniors too, so starting when you're a junior, not just the last month of when you're a senior, is a good thing to do.
Well, we had our scholarship time to sort of come toward the end of the year, and I was wondering if that discourages people, because it's when they know about, they think they can get around to it, but they don't have to turn it in until April, and, seniors in April have other things on their mind, I expect.
Yeah. Well, for me, actually, this was one of the ones that I knew I was going to be able to do, because it was in the box so early, so I had it back, I think, in November, and then I kind of focused on the essay all the way up until April, mm-hmm. is one that I actually didn't procrastinate on, so I don't know, it just kind of depends on the individual. I think that for some people, they're going to procrastinate no matter what, but yeah, just depends.
So it doesn't matter when the deadline is, it always comes in at the last minute, so.
Well, it depends.
If it's November or January or.
Yeah, you always have the students who are going to put them in there the day after, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just.
Well, I'm certainly not complaining about the outcome. I was just curious if the process worked for you.
It did. It
yeah,
did. It worked very well.
Well, we've had a delightful conversation. And when are you going out to Bristol Bay in a couple of weeks?
I leave the week after I graduate. So first week. In June, I think?
June 5th.
Got a lot of work to do. The season doesn't open until mid-June. Right?
Yeah, my dad's making us get up there early to learn how to hang nets and stuff like that.
All that stuff, that fun stuff, right?
All that fun stuff.
Give you good calluses. Well, look, best of luck to you this summer and this fall. When you get matriculated at the university, we'll be in touch, and we'll go ahead and supply the assistance directly to your student account.
All right. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. Thank you for coming by tonight.
Thank you.
I think that does it. We're done. So I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and thank Kayla and thank John and Dolly. We're pointing at something that I can't read, so. Okay, go ahead. Thank you, folks. See you next month.